We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome in to the RotoWire NFL podcast, brought to you by our friends over at WynnBET. That's W-Y-N-N, bet. I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined, as always, by Mario Puig. Mario, I'm coming at you from a new and different location this week since the last time that we talked, and this is going to be...
What?
This is going to be the new take cave for your pal.
It kind of looks like the last one, but I suppose you're in Atlanta now.
I am in Atlanta now, officially. Been here for about a week, but I also just kind of like dropped my stuff off last Thursday, went up to a lake in North Carolina for the fourth weekend, and then just kind of like procrastinated the unpacking for this week. So I've been kind of running roughshod here this past week trying to get it all together. But I do have internet, and therefore we do have a podcast. So... that's good, and have no fear. Anyone that watches our shows, I'll have goofy art on the wall soon enough.
Yeah, you're missing your terrapin flag.
Yeah, gotta have that. Gotta have my goats or my, I don't know, Andy Warhol cats or whatever it is they're doing.
A lot of people don't know this, but you can also just do what I do, which is choose to not unpack, and then you can... have lots of boxes with stuff in them, all neatly stacked, instead of, you know, having to work on taking the things out of them, get a little bad mood about it. I just leave them.
I mean, that's pro move right there. That's some 3D chess approach.
You only need your video game console, your computers, and your TVs, and the rest of it. I sometimes, if I don't want to do laundry, I'll go get a piece of clothing that I just never unpacked before. It's not exactly clean, I guess, after a year in a cardboard box, but I did wash it in between the last time I wore it and that time in question, so it's probably okay to do that.
I think so. No, that's I wouldn't say that's like Homer Simpson-esque. I'm trying to think of like who best.
No one has ever done that bad before. It's hard to think of something.
Maybe the dude from The Big Lebowski would pull a move similar to that, where he just finds a shirt. He's like, oh, well, doesn't stink. I guess I'll just fire this up. But we got a great show for everybody today. We are going to dive into a couple of things. Obviously, if you've been paying attention to Fantasy Football Twitter, if you're tuning in right now on our Periscope, on our YouTube, on our Facebook, then you're probably more than well aware. You've been bombarded with the SFB11 hashtag that is just all over the place right now. If you didn't know, that is the Scott Fishbowl. So that has, what, 11,000 entrants into it, Mario?
At least, John. There may be like 50,000. I don't know. There's a lot. It's quite a ambitious project, no doubt.
It very much is, and it's done for... there's no entry fee, but there's a charity component to it. This guy, Scott Fish, runs it. I'm probably not doing it justice completely, but they raise a ton of money for, I believe, the cause is Fantasy Cares, just from everybody pooling in and having fun. It's a great way for, you know, people who aren't necessarily in the industry to rub elbows with people that are, have some fun group chats, all that good stuff. And it's a really kind of unique format. So we'll dive into the format itself and how we've constructed our teams. This year it's music themed as far as the leagues and the divisions are concerned. So we'll get into that a little bit, break down our teams. And then yesterday I participated in the Fantasy Sports, or the FSGA Futures and Props League. We did something similar to that a year ago. This year it went a lot more smoothly because people actually kind of had an idea of a game plan of how they wanted to attack it. It's essentially a snake draft, but for drafting wagers. So one of the earlier picks there was, you know, Mahomes for MVP at his current odds, or the Browns to win the Super Bowl at 14-1. So we'll break that down a little bit, show the board to that as well. But before then, just to give everyone some background on the Fishbowl scoring settings and what kind of makes it unique, 6 points for a passing touchdown. So that's you know, something that that most of our listeners have probably seen, encountered one way or the other before, but you really, really get penalized for interceptions. It's minus 4 points for interceptions. Usually most leagues it's 1, maybe 2 points. So that adds another layer. Minus 1 point per sack, minus 1 point per incompletion as well. So did that kind of change your mind as to how you wanted to attack quarterback in this one? And was there a certain cutoff to where you would have felt like, okay, that these guys after point X just aren't viable for a winning team in this format?
So I can't claim that I thought this through a whole lot or that I have a particularly good strategy. I kind of looked at all those numbers, and instead of trying to make custom rankings or anything, I just sort of I just kind of basked in the volume of it, just this, all these details, and kind of just surrendered to them and said, like, I'm just going to take quarterbacks, excuse me, for my first couple picks. And whoever's there, I'm kind of just taking whichever my favorite is. And I'm just giving in to all those details that I don't think I can actually figure out in any actionable way. So with that said, I did lean toward, you know, it was a general increased emphasis on quarterbacks, certainly, and then especially an emphasis on kind of like clean production, because a player like Daniel Jones I would go for in, you know, best ball because he's so cheap, and because even though he plays ugly football, he chucks it and he does aggressive things that lend toward spike weeks, especially if he's going against a bad defense. In a league like this, even Daniel Jones's good best ball weeks might be kind of bad in this format. You know, it could be 32 points in standard scoring, and then in this league, it might be like 8 points because he took 5 sacks and fumbled 3 times or something.
Yeah. The sacks, the low completion rate, those are things that'll get you in trouble a little bit. So with that in mind, we'll also get into the other kind of bigger wrinkle for this one, that the one that kind of separates this from most drafts in terms of how rosters are constructed, how the board works. Tight ends are premium in this format.
Oh, yeah.
So you get an extra half point per first down and an extra half point per reception for tight ends. So it's a half point PPR for receiving, for running backs and receivers, but when you're a tight end, you get the full point PPR. So that's another added wrinkle, and that's another thing that pushes tight ends up the board. That's why you'll see not just Travis Kelce go in the first round, but, you know, upwards of 3 to 4 tight ends go in the first 2 rounds, and that might even be conservative.
Yeah, Waller went in the first, I think, and probably a lot, maybe even most. Definitely did in mine. Kittle, for some reason, slid a little bit, but only a little bit. In my draft, I took Pitts in the third round. So, if Pitts is the fourth tight end, you got to expect at least 4 in the first, I don't know what that is, like 35 picks or something like that.
Exactly. So tight ends, again, pushed up as well. I kind of steered away from that skid. I'm pretty sure I was eyeing Darren Waller, but he did not fall to me with my second pick. I wasn't comfortable taking The second tight end, Darren Waller, at pick number six. So I actually went with Lamar Jackson as my pick at 1-6. And I know that that's not conventional necessarily because he has a good completion rate, but he'll take some sacks from running around, that kind of thing. But I think that he could be a potential league winner. And in a league where, or in a contest where there's so much seeming conventional wisdom on how to do something, I think you need to steer away from it at least a little bit to differentiate yourself from the pack. So I think it was Lamar Jackson. Yeah,
I think it's pretty easily justified pick. I mean, that might actually be what the sort of conventional wisdom is. And I'm not saying the conventional wisdom is bad. I think that if anything, you probably want to go unconventional, like in the third, fourth round onward, because first and second round is where you can really blow up your team right away if you get too cute. And Lamar, I don't know, not to jinx the guy, but obviously I'm a big fan, and I think in this format he's just fine. He's going to get so many like rushing first downs too, things that assuming he even does have any sort of issue with sacks or turnovers, I think that pretty much offsets it, and I don't even take for granted that there'll be any problems with sacks or turnovers.
Yeah, so I feel really good about that one as well. And I didn't get my second quarterback until a little bit later on, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I noticed that receiver and the quality of receiver that you can get in this a few rounds down, just because there is the quarterback inflation and the tight end inflation,
and running back a little bit, at least before receiver, because the rushing first downs are a point category too, and that kind of undermines the PPR trend of the broader industry, because it's like if it's giving running backs a bit of a PPR that they otherwise don't have access to, carry for them.
Right. That's a really good point. So as a result, I didn't think that through completely. I think when I made my
second pick, it didn't occur to me until I looked at just the people. I was like, why isn't anyone taking receivers? And I was like, oh, right, because it's a guy who couldn't, a guy like Josh Jacobs probably, for instance, is better in this format than he is in standard PPR. And so it's like, yeah, guys like him move up a little bit. Some receivers got to move down a little bit.
It's true. It's true. So I was able to get Tyreek Hill with the seventh pick in the second round. He was the first receiver to come off the board. Come back around in the third, I went with CEH. We had the third round reversal, but I was picking in the middle, so it didn't really affect my strategy all that much. But so I got two shares of the Chiefs offense with my first three picks, in addition to having Lamar Jackson. Then I went ahead and got my first tight end. Mark Andrews went right before I was getting set to go with the sixth pick of the fourth. But I feel like TJ Hockenson, even still, is a decent consolation to be your tight end one this year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as much as I am partaking in, selecting Kyle Pitts two rounds ahead of Hockenson, it's not because I really am fading Hockenson or anything. It's more like I'm chasing Pitts' upside, and I'm acknowledging that this is just the last chance to get him in the draft order. But in terms of the target volume, you would actually, I think, project something similar for Hockenson as you would Pitts. It's the per play, per target production efficiency that you're distinguishing them by, and I think you would also give Pitts much better touchdown odds. But in a league that emphasizes kind of just receptions and first downs, the gap between Hockenson and Pitts, if it exists at all, might not be as much as it is in most formats people are playing this year.
Exactly. So that kind of helps smooth that over just a little bit. Pitts was the fourth tight end off the board overall in the first pick of the fourth round there. Looking down a little bit further, let's see if I can share my screen quickly.
Oh, we're getting fancy.
Yeah, we're going for it.
Doing Allen stuff.
Let's see. We got it? We sharing? Oh, too much share.
Oh, man.
We'll leave that to the
pros next time, man.
Yeah, I think so. I think we went into the Matrix. Did you see Neo in there?
I just saw like a downward spiral of tabs.
Yeah, it was a lot of tab action going on. So note to self, rehearse that before doing a live broadcast I can do Zoom. I can do it on Zoom just fine. Oh, well. But again, moving down
with my... It was still fun. It was worth something.
I thought so. But yeah, if you tuned into the live stream, you got a kick out of
that made your whole
watching
podcast.
Me screw up. At least I was able to back out of it. Because it would have been one thing...
for the rest of the podcast.
Yeah. That would have been great. Otherwise, sorry. So I have Baker Mayfield as my second quarterback. I got sniped on Trevor Lawrence, unfortunately, earlier in that round. And then I got DJ Moore, Damian Harris, Chase Edmonds, and then we are early on into the 10th round here. Before I make my 10th pick with my 9th, I have Bob Tonyan as my second tight end. So a lot of NFC Norse flavor with my tight ends.
Nice. Yeah, my draft is going very slow. I could put some people on blast for taking too long.
You're too kind.
Made every pick by pre-draft selection, so I've been very good and deserve a treat.
Yes.
So, but yeah, anyway, I got the 8th pick in mine. I took I'm in the Boston division. I was hoping I could get into the Anal Nathrak or Pig Destroyer divisions, but they were full, so I got my third choice, Boston.
Of course.
And with the 8th pick, I took Dak. Second round, I took Matt Stafford. And like I said at the start of the podcast, I did not really think about this. I think I'm okay with it, to be clear. I didn't think about it. I was like, I'm not going to come up with any good ideas if I go down this rabbit hole, so I'm going to just... opt out, try to take theoretically good quarterbacks, and then the draft really begins for me once I eliminate the possibility of just ending up totally empty-handed at quarterback. Then I'll start looking around the draft board a little bit. So I just took Dak because he was the top of the board quarterback for me. I took Stafford because he was the top of the board quarterback for me. There's an argument, I guess, that I could have or that I should have taken maybe Tom Brady in that spot. The completion points, the 6-point passing touchdowns definitely elevates Tom Brady. But my thinking was Stafford can have a season this year like Brady had last year, just with more yardage. So if that's true, then hopefully that'll pay off as a pick there. But yeah, third round, I was lucky enough to get Kyle Pitts. I wanted to get Pitts at least. Maybe I won't be lucky. Maybe my thinking is wrong, but I was glad to get him there. Something like 7 or 8 picks after Kittle went. So that was the 29th selection where I took Pitts, and yeah, I was kind of thinking similarly at tight end there as I was at quarterback earlier. I was like, I don't want to end up with like Anthony Firkser as my tight end 1 in this league, so maybe I should take one while I like one, and so I don't have to, you know, watch him go earlier than I expected in between now and my next pick. So I got Pitts, Dak, Stafford. 4th round is, I guess, where my draft began in earnest, and took DeAndre Swift there. I knew I wanted to go running back after the quarterbacks and tight ends, because like we were talking about earlier, the running back position has a little bit of inflation going on because of those rushing first downs. And I like Swift. It's not great. I was hoping for someone like Antonio Gibson, or, you know, maybe even a Cam Akers, Joe Mixon falling to me, but they didn't. So happy to get Swift there. I got him 1 pick after Myles Gaskin, so that's a dodged bullet. I mean, I like Gaskin probably more than most people, but he should not be going ahead of Swift.
No, absolutely not.
So yeah, I got Swift, and then my next pick, I might regret this one. I took J.K. Dobbins. I certainly love him as a player. I was hoping to get Michael Thomas, but he went 2 picks earlier. But there is an argument to make that maybe instead of Dobbins, I should have taken my first receiver, someone like Allen Robinson. I did not do it, though, and I took Dobbins. We'll see how it goes. I like I said, I love the talent, but the workload is pretty sketchy. Luckily, though, my 6th pick, I was able to get Amari Cooper and pair him with Dak Prescott. So that was pretty close call there. I think Cooper can do the trick there as long as my running backs, my quarterbacks, and Kyle Pitts are as good as I hope. Took Tyler Lockett in the 7th round. Just missed Julio. I really would have liked to get Julio there, but I forgot Lockett had 100 catches last year. I thought he had, like, it's actually 100.
Yeah, no, and he had some, you know, that great game against the Cardinals on that Sunday night or so, you know, he could.
Yeah, he had 40 of his catches in that game, to be fair, but still, that's like 60 more catches after that.
See, yeah, we'll take that, but in regards to Dobbins, So what are the workload concerns exactly? I guess just the fact that Lamar Jackson's going to be running a lot, and you know Gus Edwards is also going to push for 100 some odd carries.
Yeah, Gus Edwards is a good running back, you know? Like, he's and just as importantly, he's a perfect fit for the sort of subtype that they feature in that offense, because the running back position that he plays isn't quite the same as what Dobbins plays, and it's like the short yardage, the really bruising kind of tasks, the sort of just hammer halfback dive plays, those suit Edwards so well. He's not really matched by many running backs in the entire league in that one capacity, so Dobbins could be great and still not challenge him in that one capacity. And it's just a bad starting point if your running back that you're taking in the first four rounds isn't even the heir to the short yardage role. And I think that, you know, Dobbins is clearly the pass catching guy, but that might be a very small role too. So it makes him very touchdown dependent. And I wasn't exactly eager to take him at that last spot, but the reason I rationalized it was because I thought, well, look, Dobbins is going to always have a high yards per carry and a high touchdown rate because he is in the Lamar Jackson offense. So I don't really buy the idea that, like, oh, he's vulnerable to you know, really bad touchdown regression and that he's going to go cold for that reason. Like, he'll go cold if Lamar goes cold, and I don't think Lamar's going cold. So it's just he's always going to score touchdowns, more touchdowns per carry than most running backs. And if, you know, I don't want Gus Edwards to get hurt, but the guy was hurt a lot at Miami. That's basically why he transferred out of Miami, while they went with lesser running backs like Mark Walton.
Travis Homer, yeah.
Well, I thought Travis Homer was pretty good, but Edwards, I think, was like a little bit before him. But in any words, he was really explosive at Miami, just got hurt a bunch, and then they ran him out for some players who just weren't as good as him. And so he's had good luck in the NFL staying healthy. Certainly hope that continues to be the case. But in the event that he got hurt, then Dobbins would be the three down guy. And in that case, he becomes not likely to be like a top 12 running back, but you know, he's jumping from that sort of low floor running back to kind of weekly sort of projection to a, you know, high ceiling running back to sort of projection, I think. And he'll be streaky as long as his role remains the way it is. But the explosiveness is not going anywhere. Like, the Ravens offense is explosive, and Dobbins himself is a uniquely explosive player. So I'm not really worried about that kind of problem for him. It's just he's not going to have many 20 carry games if he has any at all.
Right. So I think, so, you know, if he can do an improvement upon what maybe like Mark Ingram did there in 2019.
Right, that's what you're hoping for. And
right,
I think he's
that's
definitely
in the cards.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he should. He really, really came on strong after the bye week last season. So any other comments there as far as how your receiving core is shaping up? You've got two guys in Cooper and Lockett. You know, Lockett, I imagine you got – thinking he's going to get a decent amount of volume. Cooper with the touchdown upside. Is there a genre of receiver that you want to address next to kind of round things out, or do you want to keep pushing in one direction? And is it going to be with your eighth pick?
Right, so still waiting on my eighth pick, which will be 92nd overall. I'm pretty sure I'm going to go receiver. I did look a little bit at quarterback and at running back and even tight end. I might go Noah Fant. I guess that's kind of like my backup plan, but I'm out on the running backs for now. There are some players who I find interesting, but I think for what I need for my third running back spot, there are more players on the board at running back that I can get in a round, knock on wood, or two, three, something like that. And in the meantime, I think I am not strong at receiver. I need to add some more heft at receiver. So I'll probably target DJ Chark with my next pick. It's probably going to be between him and maybe Cortland Sutton, maybe Tyler Boyd, and Noah Fant, something like that. So Fant is, he's of course, you know, he's normally around that ninth round range in normal leagues, and I'm not exactly getting my hopes up super high for him. I think certainly if they trade for Aaron Rodgers somehow, then he's going to be, you know, jumping from the ninth to maybe the sixth or fifth round, something like that. But even if they have Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Lock, whatever, thought Fant did a good job last year, and he's a good candidate, I think, for something like 80, 85 catches.
Yeah, I think so as well. That's an offense that really could be so just elevated by even like top 14-ish level quarterback play. Let
Locke
alone Aaron Rodgers.
Locke is like the 45th best quarterback.
Yeah, not great. I don't really see it getting much better either, unfortunately. So it's going to be a lot of wide open receivers getting missed, I feel like.
I think Bridgewater would be an improvement. It's just not exciting. But it would suit Fant. Fant was getting open pretty well underneath last year. So if Teddy's in there, I think you can go ahead and raise your Fant projection this year.
Okay, all right. That works. Looking just kind of as we move forward, obviously we're on day four of this, and we're only in round nine for our respective leagues. So we still got a ways to go on this. This is my first year in it. Do you have any end game advice for the newbies out there in the fishbowl as far as how you want to attack it? Do you take it kind of like you're just throwing darts and best ball at a certain point?
I don't know. I think you can kind of take just whatever approach you normally would within the positional categories. It's more like trying to figure out the positional quirks that come with a scoring system like this. And no small part of it this year is the kicker scoring, which I haven't even looked at. I, to be honest, won't look at it. I'm just going to probably start taking a kicker when other people do. I'll just assume like, oh, I guess I should do that now. And you could argue that if you're in it, you should take a more diligent approach than that, and maybe you could get some sort of edge in the kicking category. But as far as that goes, I'm just going to kind of look at, you know, does this guy make 50 yarders, and what do I project for his offense? And if I think he's halfway decent, maybe I'll take that up. But yeah, they got the kicker eligibility in the flex spot, so we'll see. There's going to be some kicker twists that didn't exist in the past seasons.
Yes, yeah, and to expound on that, looking at the league page, it's decimal scoring for kicking. So if you kick a 37-yarder, that's 3.7 points as opposed to just 3. You get 1 point for an extra point. You get really penalized for a missed field goal, minus 3, and then you get minus 1 point for any missed extra points as well. So you want some accuracy, because a guy who's just like, you know, hitting 75-80% of his kicks, you know, that's a lot of minus threes on your tally that could really kind of start to sag you down.
Yeah, minus 3 for a field goal. Maybe I'll just punt at the kicker position. I don't know. Sounds like some work to figure it out. I don't really like doing that.
Yeah, I'm not even sure that the Roto customization can really like implement those types of wild scoring stats. Maybe they can figure it out. Before we get on to the next part of the show, let's go ahead and hear a quick word from our sponsors.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's jump on over to the FSGA's futures and props draft. We did that yesterday afternoon, Wednesday afternoon. It was a lot of fun. We did the first inaugural one of them a year ago. Our friend Digger Turnbull of the FSGA came up with the idea. And in essence, it is a snake draft. You have an entire board of picks from which to choose. Last year, or I'll go a little bit further. So essentially, you got the Super Bowl odds. You got Heisman Trophy odds this year, college football win totals, NFL win totals, comeback player of the year, rookie of the year, offensive and defensive, coach of the year. So many picks to choose from in addition to player statistical props. And I think the biggest difference this year is that everyone was kind of swinging for the fences and going for those higher payout type of wagers. I think a lot of people last year sunk a little bit too many into the, you know, minus 110 Jarvis Landry under 1,000 yards type of bets. And even if you get that right for 10% of the bankroll that they give you, it's still not necessarily going to push you over the edge. What is going to push you over the edge is getting coach of the year right. It's something like that. Getting your MVP right. If you get a long shot Super Bowl, I'm sure whoever picked the Bucks last year, I know that they were picked. Whoever picked them a year ago, I'm sure finished high in the rankings, that sort of thing. So I wanted to lead things off with, I had the third overall pick in this one. I went with those Georgia Bulldogs to win the national championship at 8-1 for $1,000 imaginary dollars.
What is what's Georgia got going for it other than what's George Pickens' injury status?
So he tore his ACL in March, so I'm kind of not counting on him playing. But I think the difference this year is that whereas Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson are all replacing their quarterbacks, Georgia is not. I know that DJ Uiagalelei played a bit for Clemson a year ago, but JT Daniels finished the year for Georgia and looked really good doing it. So I totally buy in on him. He'll be another year removed from his ACL injury. This is the second year of Todd Monken's offensive system being implemented. They've recruited at the highest level basically for the last few years, so the roster is stacked with talent both sides of the ball. The backfield is I would argue too loaded. I wish that one of those seniors did not come back. I wish Zamir White or someone went to the NFL instead, so it'd be clear the runway for some of those younger guys. But they pretty much have it all in front of them. We'll kind of have a better picture of how smart or dumb that bet looks Labor Day weekend when they play Clemson at a neutral site in Charlotte.
I feel like
Georgia has a very, very good chance of winning it all this year, and I've not really said that in years past, even the year that that they kind of came out of nowhere and surprised everyone and made the playoff. So then I piggybacked that one with my second pick. I went with a Super Bowl selection. I went with the Bucks at 9-2 odds for about 10% of my imaginary bankroll. Liked that one. And then I went with a couple of high plus odds type of selections. Brandon Staley, Coach of the Year, plus 1,300, and Jalen Phillips, Rookie of the Year, or Defensive Rookie of the Year, at plus 900. Do you like either of those?
Well, with a quarterback like Herbert, Staley has a certain, you know, floor and ceiling that most coaches don't have the benefit of. And, he seems like a good coach. I really think he's terrible at personnel. The draft picks that they made
are
wildly awful to me, like truly some of the worst I've ever seen. But that just makes him – that's just more reason to believe he's like McVay, which is to say a good schemer and a good – in-game coach, which obviously you can look at McVay's results. That turned out to matter quite a bit. Those two guys and Kyle Shanahan love undermining themselves with terrible draft picks, but they really know what they're doing as far as running the field, you know. So we'll see. Herbert's talent could take him pretty high if he does his part. So certainly from that perspective, it makes a lot of sense. You had another coach of the year pick that I think I like even better, if only because no one considers it a possibility, whereas
yes.
I happen to think it's a pretty good possibility. But yeah, Dan Campbell, obviously your NFC part of this broader wager that you're making. And as far as NFC options go, I really like Campbell, especially for the odds. I know a lot of people are getting freaked out because they're like, oh, he said he wants to play football like a caveman. He wants to be a junkyard dog, and that means he's going to hate throwing the ball, which is all
that you're allowed to do. Junkyard dogs don't have spreadsheets.
Yeah, doesn't he know that that you have to throw the ball every play? What kind of foul idiot is he? And so on. And I think that's a bit of an overreaction. I mean, the guy has like a mascot kind of role to play, and he's embracing it. He's hamming it up to try to be likable and relatable to his players while carrying a general, you know, football guy kind of cultural aesthetic, and it's harmless. Like it's fine. He's not Jeff Fisher just because he talks like a crazy person. Like if anything, it's like you know, Jeff Fisher would have been boring or something probably. Like Dan Campbell just acts silly. It's not a big deal. He's I think going to go into his head coaching role basically looking to carry the principles of Bill Parcells, who he played under. Him and Aaron Glenn, the defensive coordinator, are both Bill Parcells' disciples. Anthony Lynn even might be a little bit of a Parcells disciple. I know he wasn't around the Cowboys as long, but these are all guys who are just, you know, they're well versed on a lot of football subjects. I think that Dan Campbell has been pretty pragmatic rather than, you know, rigidly ideological. And that's exactly what Bill Parcells was. Like he talked like a hard nosed, you know, macho Jersey guy, but then he would take Drew Bledsoe out there and call 680 pass attempts back in 1995, which no one was really doing back then. So Campbell, I think, will be a reasonable coach who runs a good ship basically and gets his players to play hard for him. And that's kind of all a guy like Pete Carroll really is. You know, Pete Carroll does so many stupid things in so many respects, but because his players, you know, play at 110% for him, they're always in the hunt. And I think Campbell could be that kind of coach. And I don't want to rule out the possibility of him just having, like, good schemes, too. I think Campbell could be a pretty, not sharp as in, like, you know, McVay level sharp, but I think he's a totally good head coaching candidate, and people tend to reject the Lions as like a joke team, and I don't really think they are.
Yeah, I think that there's like certain criteria that seem to be met for coach of the year, and it's obviously like a very kind of narrative based. However you do relative to expectations can really drive, you know, how that result is ended. You know, that's why like Bill Belichick never wins it. It's because he does what he's expected to do. Let's see, Dan Harris from Fantasy Pros, he was in this league a year ago, and we were talking about during the broadcast yesterday, we were talking about approaching the coach of the year props from those certain angles, and it was a lot of chasing guys who don't have much in the way of expectations. I was surprised that you know, as the board started to get emptied a little bit, Robert Saleh, he was one of the last ones that was taken, that ended up being taken. Not every coach was wagered on, of course. Some guys just aren't really good bets for that award. But I thought he was an interesting one. And another one that I was considering, I didn't end up having him fall to me. What about Sean Payton?
He's a good coach. He could be in on that. It's hard for me to have any sort of concept, any sort of conception of like probable or unlikely with this kind of category, because like you said, the secondary details that are difficult to foresee can change things in a bit in a hurry. I will say, I think other than the guys that you mentioned, I like Brian Flores quite a bit for the Dolphins. I might have. So you got Jalen Phillips for the Defensive Rookie of the Year. I might have tried to do a bet stack where I have Brian Flores winning Coach of the Year and Phillips. You know, Phillips has a big. If Phillips has like 13 sacks this year or something, then Brian Flores is Coach of the Year. Odds have to go up with that because if Phillips has a year like that, the Dolphins' defense was probably pretty terrifying. And,
right.
If Tua is getting better, then the offense can lift more than it did previously. So I like Flores quite a bit. He's kind of like the AFC Dan Campbell. It's like he's a guy who gets the troops all psychotic and, you know, jacked up on super soldier serum, and they go play berserk for him. Like, he's one of those guys, and he has a pretty ambitious, complex defense that I think will improve pretty much every year. Like, you saw last year a little bit of it. They got torched in their first month, and then they got better as the year went along. And that makes sense because there's a lot to learn about that defense. And there is a chance that they have sort of like a top five defense and a top, you know, 20-ish offense. And I think that's enough to get into the playoffs. Like, it's a tough division, namely the Bills and the Patriots. But if you have results like that in the broader metrics, it's trending upward, I think.
Yeah, and going back to Peyton just for a second, I just think that a lot of people are, you know, this is the beginning of the non-Drew Brees era. We don't have a for sure quarterback up next. You know, it's going to be the Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston. So there's going to be a lot of, is this Peyton's best coaching job? You know, if he gets that decision right. So
they got a really good offensive line. So if I think it has to be Winston. Like, I will say this: if they go with Hill, then I don't like Sean Payton for Coach of the Year. But if they go with Winston, then I think he's got a chance.
No, that's a really, really perfect way to sum that one up. Yeah, if it, Taysom would really, really put him behind the eight ball for an award that's ostensibly awards good coaching decisions. And then Flores, I was totally with you on that a year ago as well. I almost had that one pay off at crazy odds. That might have changed some of the standings there. I really liked him coming into last year, and they almost made the playoffs despite playing some quarterback musical chairs. So yeah, now with a more settled quarterback situation, another year with that defense installed, I really like those odds for Flores too. Absolutely. Looking elsewhere, there were a few bets titled Other, which were essentially who's going to start for what team in week one. And Andy Dalton was, I think he was like minus at least 250. It might have been even heavier. It might have been like minus 500. And Fields plus 300. I went Fields. I didn't throw down a ton, but I threw down on the idea of Fields at plus money starting week one. I don't think there's a non-zero chance he starts then, despite what Matt Nagy's saying.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me to approach because it's like, We have trouble getting past whatever we believe it is that's going to happen, you know, which I happen to believe Dalton will start week one, but the odds account for that. And so it's hard to track, you know, the dynamics of the odds as they get more favorable like that. But I agree, it can't be non-zero. It's obviously much better than that chance that Fields is out there. So at odds like that, it's at worst a calculated risk. And as much as I believe Andy Dalton is going to start week one, it's certainly not because I think that's a good idea. And it's not because I even have my, you know, finger on any particular pulse. It's just kind of a sort of a pessimistic guess, basically. So if all I have really for reasoning that Dalton's going to start week one is like, I got a bad feeling about it, then, you know, fading what is just a sentiment can't be a bad idea, especially if you get favorable odds on it.
That's buttons
like
it
we're
up
basically
pretty well.
We're basically reasoning Dalton's going to start week one because we're like, yeah, Nagy might not really be the guy. He might be kind of dumb. Maybe that kicker saga just broke his brain or something. But it's like, if he's a halfway decent coach, if he's the guy we hoped he was a couple of years ago when he won Coach of the Year, then maybe Fields will start because they got to get him out there. And it's, we know Dalton's not going to, you know, they're not going to miss out on the wild card because they went from Dalton to Fields, and they're definitely not going to the Super Bowl with Dalton.
And, you know, it's one of those things where if you're just evaluating the two of them, even if you want to have Dalton go into training camp as the number one, if Fields is clearly the better quarterback for every single week of training camp and you still are just blindly casting your lot with a veteran just because, or because you don't want to go back on your word of what you said in April.
In a tweet.
Yeah, in a tweet. Andy Dalton.
People are
going to
roast our tweet if we start.
Yeah, we don't want that. That's way worse than losing.
We're going to be the corn cob of the day.
Oh, we're getting ratioed. We're the main character on Twitter today.
But, to extrapolate a little bit, I am concerned, though, that Dalton will be basically a better practice player than Fields. And football coaches are so bad about this. I don't know why. I'm sure there's a good reason, because they all are like this. But they can't separate practice reps from a broader player projection, you know? They can't remember, like, oh, of course I should grade Dalton more rigorously in practice for how well he does. He knows all the answers. He knows how to do all this already. It's like his fourth time taking the ACT and Fields is taking it his first time. You have to remember, like, you'll get better with each subsequent one. So they can't, it's foolish to look at Dalton and say, like, who's better at this today, when this today is not even the task at hand. It's going to be a different kind of live bullet setting when the game happens. And you have to remember, real talent elevates from that transition, and deficient talent sinks. And it's like, it's such an obvious lesson, but you just can't get coaches to learn it. So I am worried that, you know, between Dalton knowing how to be a, you know, consummate professional, knowing how practices work, knowing how to do the stuff that coaches just want to see and kind of play teacher's pet that way, I am concerned about Fields, you know, being on the bench in week one for that reason. But man, if you could modify that bet a little bit to, like, who's starting week three, then I'm going to get a lot more aggressive about it, because Dalton does suck and he needs to go eventually.
Yeah, I think so too. But again, I think you have it drawn up right, and I think
they should
go with
Fields. They should go with Fields. The bet should work if Nagy does what he should.
But, you know, even with him having the coach of the year trophy on his wall, you still can't really trust him to make the right call this time, even with, like,
he's the most important position
in football.
He's like Henry Winkler. I know we bring up the water boy basically every single podcast, but he's Henry Winkler after the Bobby Bowden stand-in on the water boy broke his brain. And it's like, instead of having his playbook stolen by Bobby Bowden, it was like Eddie Pinheiro missing six field goals that broke his brain.
I hate him.
Yeah.
Talking into a phone that's not plugged into anything.
That's basically where he's at. Yeah.
It really did break his brain, though. And any Chicago Bears fan listening to this will certainly agree with that. One other one I wanted to toss out to you. I know we've talked about this previously, but I put down on, I didn't do a ton of win totals, but Steelers under 8.5, even with a 17-game season.
Lock.
I felt pretty good about that one.
Yeah, I guess I keep forgetting there's 17 games this year, but I will say no hesitation. Steelers get the losing record. It's going to happen. Like, they've been going like 20 years in a row or whatever. Tomlin, he's a great coach. I'm not saying that, like, he isn't good enough for that streak to keep going. But the players that he has to work with, and especially the quarterback play, are lower than they've been in a while. And you can't expect your defense to be so good that you go 9-7 or whatever, 10, I don't know what the new 9-7 is, whatever that is. You can't just bank on your defense carrying, you know, a negative offense into that territory. That's kind of your best case scenario, and the best case scenario doesn't happen forever. Roethlisberger, I think at this point, is just returning. He just wants to get back long enough to pass the blame to his receivers, and then he's going to check out. Like, that's checking out on top for Ben at this point. It's like, I didn't suck in 2020. Remember my 2021 receivers dropping all those passes that I hanged them out to dry on? What could I do? I couldn't do anything. I tried to be the soldier I've always been, and you know, be like this martyr like figure for the team, and these dang receivers just. Yeah, they undermined the whole team.
They really let us down.
Yeah, so I think Ben's just in it to make those guys look bad and let that be the narrative to end his career. Like, it's a shame Ben's career ended that way with those receivers dropping all those passes. It's so weird how they got injured all those times catching those trying to catch those passes. But anyway, nothing. Like, so many of the plays this year are just going to be Ben doing the Flacco to Lamar throw. Just like try to get the receiver to look bad, getting clobbered over and over.
Yeah, with like also a hot potato element of it, because like they're not going to be able to protect him at all. So he's going to be throwing the ball like in the same motion that he's catching the ball when from shotgun. Like
he just wants a whatever Sunday NFL countdown segment about how like drops are plaguing the Steelers. What could have been if Ben Roethlisberger hadn't been let down by his team.
Yes,
he's got ice packs on every single inch of his body.
Oh yeah. That's just always
a stretcher. Yeah.
He's in his iron lung at the press conference.
Always got to bring up the iron lung. Never.
I do. That's one of my favorite comedic props. I think that's a good note to end it on for this one. So for Mario Puig, I'm John McCagney. Thanks for listening to the RotoWire NFL podcast, brought to you again by our friends at WinBet. I will be in Vegas next week, so I'm not sure if we'll have an episode again next week. I assume we will. It might just be going live on Friday instead of Thursday, but we will keep you all apprised on that. And again, thank you for listening to the RotoWire NFL podcast, brought to you by WinBet.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.